Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, February 4th, 2026. It's February. On 91.7 FM WHUS Doors, I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, to give you the update, I went to see the neurosurgeon last week. I saw the neurosurgeon, APRN Tamika, who's a lovely woman, and we talked about it. Now, when I saw Dr. Zach at UConn to get my PRP shot, which I already talked about, it was his opinion that the laminectomy did not work. And because I think that Dr. Scott thinks I just need more time and I may be aggravating it with too much or the wrong kind of exercise, and he may have a point. And Tamika also thought, for whatever reason, she thought that I probably didn't need more surgery and just needed more time to heal. But of course, the only way to be sure is to get another MRI. So they are working on the pre-auth for another MRI. And this MRI is going to be with contrast, with and without contrast, because they have to look at the site and the contrast helps them to see what's going on better. So I had had dye, I am assuming contrast dye, when I had my cortisone shot in my back and I did not react to it. So hopefully I'll be fine with this contrast dye. I don't tend to be a very allergic person. So I'm hoping that I'll be fine with the contrast dye, because you can have allergic reactions to contrast dye, but I've never had. They put some kind of dye in me, and I'm assuming it was contrast dye when I had the cortisone shot. So hopefully it's the same stuff, and I didn't react to that. So that's good. So when is the MRI? Well, we're waiting for the pre-auth, and then hopefully I can go back to the same spot where I had the MRI last time at UConn, on the UConn campus. It was great. That was a great experience. Anyway, so that's what's going on with that. In the meantime, I still have discomfort in that leg. I'm still doing PT exercises and as much cycling as I can manage. I had a break over the weekend because we went to New Jersey to see my nephew have his bar mitzvah. So that was exciting. And so we just sort of stayed in the hotel and rested when we weren't doing the bar mitzvah. And so I got off track a little bit with exercise, but I'm back on it today. I did some PT and a short bike workout, and I'll continue to do that. One of the things that I read, I found somebody online who is a PT who has advice for people with spinal stenosis. And he said there's certain things you shouldn't do. And one of the things you shouldn't do is to stretch out the nerve. And one of the things I was doing is figure four in yoga. And I think the figure four was aggravating, especially when I do the figure four and I pull my leg in towards my chest. It provides a stretch on that femoral nerve, and the femoral nerve doesn't like that. So I'm going to stop doing that. And I'm going to be much more careful about nerve stretch. And the other thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a different physical therapy place, one that works more with body mechanics than just exercise. And so I want to head over to Crossroads, and I think they're pretty good at that. So I'm going to try that and see if they have something different to tell me. And the other thing is I have been eating too much sugar over the holidays. And so I'm going to stop that, because when you stop eating sugar, your weight gets a little bit lower and you get less inflammation. So I'm going to work on reducing, you know, dramatically reducing my sugar and see if that helps. And because, you know, I had my cousin Mark said that he lost 30 pounds and he has the same thing I do, femoral neuralgia, and it got better. So that's interesting. So sugar causes inflammation and it also causes weight gain. So we're going to see if handling any of those things, you know, just these are simple things that can be done to avoid more surgery. But we're going to see. I mean, if my spine has collapsed on itself since the surgery, I may need more surgery and I might need a fusion. So Tamika didn't think that that was the case, but she explained that if the vertebrae collapse on the foramen, if the foramen isn't patent and the vertebrae won't stand up and keep away from the foramina, that's when you need to have a rod in there to hold it up. And she didn't think that that's what was going on with me. The thing is, my nerve pain starts in my leg. I don't have nerve pain going from my back to my rear end. It starts in my leg, which makes me wonder if it's the nerve itself that's cranky. However, when I do David Middock, he's a physical therapist in Texas, and he has a YouTube channel. And so I looked at some of his exercises, and they're just some of the really basic ones I was doing in the beginning for sinus stenosis. And when I do those, they seem to make me feel better. And they're just pelvic tilts, knee to chest, keeping your back on the floor and reaching for your knees like a little crunch. And angry cat, which means you get on all fours and you tuck in your, you tighten your rear end and you put your arm, it's like when you do cat and cow in yoga. So you're just doing the cat part and you're tensing up when you do it, and then you release and you tense up when you do it. That, and then you do basically angry cat seated, and that's what you do. And he says you can do that many times, any or all of those multiple times a day. So if I have a few minutes, I could be doing angry cat or like the seated angry cat anytime. You could do it standing as well. That's what he said. And, you know, while I'm sitting in bed, I could be doing the pelvic tucks and the stuff that's lying down, but mostly the pelvic tilts. Pelvic tilts are very easy to do anywhere where you can lie down. So that's what's going on with that. I still have some topicals on. Menthol is nice. DMSO is nice. Arnica is nice. Magnesium is nice. They are helpful. The pain is not all gone, and it's been since last April. It's a little daunting. My knee, I tried to, there's a TikTok challenge where you can put yourself into this music and do this little dance, and it involves hopping on one foot. And I tried to do that for a second, and my knee said, no, you're not doing that. So I learned that I cannot hop on one foot at this point. However, with the PRP, you know, I didn't do as much exercise this weekend, and Dr. Zach said you have to move it. So I didn't get as much movement, and riding on a bicycle is helpful. So what I'm trying to do, it's been over 2 weeks since I got the PRP, so I probably could use a little more effort, but I think if I'm going to do long rides, like an hour or more, I'm not going to stress myself. Like if I do a workout, because on Zwift they have workouts where you can do intervals, I'm going to keep those short, 20 minutes or less. And if I ride longer, I'm going to make them easy. So that's where it's going on with that. And then the knee isn't too bad. It's not 100%, but it's not too bad. I'm continuing to brace it with a light brace. And I'm able to walk on it. There's no extreme pain. I'm able to do my PT exercises and bike. And so that's going okay. And then there's the narrow angle. Well, I think I told you 2 weeks ago that I was diagnosed with narrow angle, and I do not have glaucoma. I have normal intraocular pressure, but I have narrow angles, which means my lens is very close to my iris, which makes it so that the fluid can't drain as well. And so I got an appointment with an ophthalmologist in New Britain, Dr. Wong, and I saw him, and I was hoping he would give me, if I needed an iridotomy, he would do it that day. But he said, no, I can't do the iridotomy this day. You have to, you need a pre-auth first, and we also only do one eye at a time. So I'm going to have the first eye done on Wednesday the 4th. And so Ron's going to drive me. And then I have to wait 2 weeks because I have a tooth extraction on the 11th. So I have so much going on with my health. So anyway, so one of the things I want to talk about today was narrow angle. And I wanted to check in with Ron on how his neck is doing. How's your health doing?
I got a pain in the neck. Uh-huh. Yeah, I am a pain in the neck.
Yeah, that's another story.
You know, it's, what do I say about this? I have a lack of flexibility, and that is going to continue. And it's taking a lot of adjustment, and I can't turn my head in the ways that I used to be able to turn my head.
Right.
And I can't look up the way I used to be able to look up. So when you're a person who has spent most of your life on your bicycle, This is
you have to be able to look any which way.
This is a critical problem because right. I have to be able to see where I'm going.
Yeah, you're going to have to wear lots of mirrors.
So mirrors are definitely happening. Different stem styles are happening right now, too.
Right.
I've made adjustments on three of my bikes so far.
Yeah.
And it's going to take time to get used to all that. But I'm most concerned about, you know, I mean, I can look right and left pretty good, but not like I used to.
Right.
And being able to see traffic, it makes me a little bit concerned.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. But I'm not going to stop riding my bike because of it.
No.
And of course, the suggestion has been made to me that maybe I should consider a recumbent bike.
Right.
Which would certainly resolve the problem as far as that goes.
Doesn't resolve the looking right and left problem, though.
Well, it doesn't resolve the looking right and left problem, but you can put mirrors right and left, so you can have a couple mirrors on it. What it doesn't resolve is the efficiency of riding a bicycle, which is they're not very efficient.
No, right.
So you got to, you know, compensate for it on the hills. And
you get really strong quads.
And I'm not ready for that yet.
Right. No, I hear you.
I'm working on strong quads right now. I'm doing wall seats.
Right. And yeah, me too.
My quads are getting much stronger. No question about that. But it's, you know, because I'm trying to get back the strength I lost because I was really kind of off the bike for almost 2 years.
Right.
And I lost a lot
of
strength.
Fitness. Oh, my goodness. It's so frustrating.
Yep. So that's where I'm at.
So onward and upward. So let's explain what narrow angle is exactly. So narrow angles, what it means. So thanks to Moorfields Private Eye Hospital in Britain in the UK for explaining this. So narrow angle means it has to do with the drainage angle. It's the part of the eye that drains fluid from the front chamber of the eye. The drainage angle sits between the front of the iris, which is the color part of the eye, and the cornea, the clear window at the front of the eye. If the drainage gap is narrow, it can, in some circumstances, reduce the drainage of fluid and result in increased eye pressure, which I don't have. I don't have increased eye pressure. If the pressure rises quickly, this is termed acute angle closure. This is very rare, but can require urgent treatment. So the likelihood of me getting acute angle closure isn't great, but you still want to protect me from it, and that's why you get the iridotomy. More commonly, over time, high eye pressure can damage the optic nerve, resulting in loss of vision, which is angle closure glaucoma. However, in the majority of people, having a narrow angle does not result in high eye pressure or glaucoma. Well, that's a relief. So what's your risk if you have narrow angles? People with narrow angles without any other significant risk factor or abnormality of the eye have a risk of around 1 in 1,000 per year of developing high pressure. So chances are excellent that this won't happen to me. So a large research trial that was conducted in China showed that even in patients deemed to have the highest risk, the risk of developing an episode of high pressure was very low. In the UK, the Royal College of Ophthalmologists and the College of Optometrists, which are the two eye care professional bodies, have advised that most people with narrow angles can be monitored by their opticians in the community. No kidding! And yet here, they want to do the iridotomy. It's interesting. So developing a high eye pressure quickly, which is acute angle closure, can lead to certain symptoms. Seeing halos around light, which is like the same thing you get when you have cataracts. Mm-hmm. Eye pain or a headache around the affected eye. Blurred vision, a red eye, and nausea and vomiting. And I don't have any of that. I get a little bit of blurry vision that comes and goes. I think that may be from the Demodex. So if one of these symptoms occurs in isolation, it's uncommon that there's a problem. See that? If you get two or more of these symptoms for more than an hour, it's important to attend to go to the ER and get medical attention, preferably from an ophthalmologist. Urgent treatment usually includes pills, eye drop medications, and laser treatment. If the high pressure develops more slowly, it may be that there are no appreciable symptoms initially. This is termed chronic angle closure, which can be identified in a routine optician's test. Can it cause glaucoma? When you have persistent eye pressure, it can cause damage to the optic nerve, and irreversible vision loss. The optic nerve is the main nerve of the eye, which carries all of our visual information to the brain for interpretation. When the optic nerve is damaged, this can limit what we see in our field of vision. When the high pressure is caused by narrow drainage angles, this is termed angle closure glaucoma. Who should have preventative treatment? In people at high risk of angle closure glaucoma, which is not clear that I am. It sounds like I'm at low risk. A preventative treatment, laser iridotomy. This is what I'm going to have done. I guess they think that I don't know if this is just what the standard of care is. If you get diagnosed with narrow angles, you get an iridotomy. My friend Stephanie had this herself about 5 years ago, and I've been diagnosed with narrow angles, and that's what they're offering me. And I don't know if they think about what my actual risk is, since I don't have glaucoma. I have normal intraocular pressure, and I take so many supplements that keep your intraocular pressure down, which I can tell you about in a little bit. They create a small hole in your iris, which acts as an alternate route for fluid flow. This minimizes the risk of an attack of high pressure and opens the drainage angle in most patients. Recent research has shown a low risk of acute angle closure in most people with narrow angles and no signs of high pressure or glaucoma. That would be me. For this reason, laser iridotomy is no longer recommended for the majority of these people in the UK. But here, that's the standard of care. That's very interesting. There are some people who are at higher risk due to other factors or eye conditions who they do recommend the iridotomy. People who only have one good or functioning eye, not me. Vulnerable adults who may not be able to report ocular or visual symptoms. I can report anything. People who are very long-sighted. I don't know that I'm... So that means farsighted. This is a British way of saying farsighted. I don't think I'm extremely farsighted. I'm wearing 2.0 reading glasses right now. And I jump back and forth between 1.75s and 2.0s because sometimes the 2.0s seem like they're too much for me. They give me a little bit of headache. And that's not very bad. And I know my mother, when I borrow her reading glasses, I'm not sure what she has. She has 2.5s or 3s or something because they're really uncomfortable. People with a family history of high pressure attacks. Nobody has a history of this in my family. People with diabetes who require frequent eye exams that require pupil dilation. I don't have diabetes. People who live in remote locations where access to eye care may not be possible in a timely manner. Not me. People using anticholinergic medications, tricyclic antidepressants like amitriptyline, specific asthma medications that are cholinergic agonists, specific medication, or no, they would be cholinergic antagonists, sorry, and other medications for abdominal cramps, also these are also anticholinergics, and oxybutynin. All of those have anticholinergic properties. Anticholinergics dilate the eye. If you take an anticholinergic like scopolamine or atropine or any of these mentioned, you can get a dilated eye. And they dilate your eye with an anticholinergic. So, by the way, when you go to the eye doctor and you have narrow angles, they don't dilate you. I don't know if this means that once I get the iridotomy procedure, they can then dilate me. So I'll ask Dr. Wong about that. What if I have narrow angles but no treatment is required? Well, I wouldn't know about that because I'm not sitting in Great Britain. We recommend yearly checkups with your local optometrist, of course. Optometrists can carry out the routine tests that can screen for signs of glaucoma, including increased eye pressure measurement, visual field testing, and assessment of the optic nerve. If you develop persistent symptoms, you have to go to the ER. So that's what narrow angle is, and that's what I have. And we just learned that in the UK, they're less likely to even treat. Like if I had this in the UK, they would just monitor me. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And I wonder if they're a little gung-ho in the U.S. Why do you suppose they want to do the procedure in the U.S. versus they just monitor in the U.K.? Do you think it's a socialized medicine thing?
I have no idea. I don't know. Might be.
It's really interesting because both Stephanie and I were diagnosed with narrow angles and we were immediately offered iridotomy. And neither of us had increased intraocular pressure. Very interesting. All right, so let's talk about glaucoma. Let's talk about natural treatments for glaucoma, since we're talking about glaucoma. So glaucoma, the definition of glaucoma is increased intraocular pressure for a variety of reasons. Glaucoma can't be cured, but natural treatments like ginkgo biloba, bilberry, and medical cannabis may help manage symptoms due to their antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. I also read that while I have narrow angles, I am not to do cannabis because do you find that cannabis causes your eyes to dilate?
supposed to, yeah, it does.
Right.
It does that with everyone.
Right. So right. I can't do cannabis while I have this. So that's why when I go see Dr. Wong, don't let me forget, I have to ask him, number one, can I indulge in cannabis? Because cannabis is good for nerve pain. And number two, can I be dilated once I get the iridotomy? Does that mean when I go to the optometrist or ophthalmologist just for my yearly checkup, can I now be dilated? All right. So the effectiveness of natural treatments for glaucoma is not definitively proven and may have side effects or cause interactions with existing meds. Always consult a medical professional. Conventional treatments like medications, laser surgery, and open surgeries are available to slow the progression of glaucoma and ease symptoms by reducing intraocular pressure. Stephanie, who gets anxious about procedures, she's anxious about procedures. I am like, give me the procedure. If this is going to fix me, I want it yesterday. And I don't care, you know. I'm going to ask him if you can come in with me during the procedure, if you don't mind. Do you mind?
I don't mind.
Stephanie said that it's better if Ron is there holding your hand because the oxytocin will keep you calmer. So I'll ask him. I don't know if I'll feel like it. I mean, because the thing is, she's, you know, it's disconcerting to get, you know, numbing eye drops put in your eyes, and then they come at you with that, with the camera. And when they test your intraocular pressure, that you see that blue light and the thing touches your eye. But I don't care. I mean, I just sit there and let them do their thing, and it's not a big deal to me. And if it's like that, then I'm not going to be that excited about it. I asked him if when I go for the procedure, can I drive myself? The thing is, we're driving an hour away. So he said, for the first eye, you should have somebody drive you because you don't know how you're going to be. If you get out of the procedure and you're like, well, wow, I'm fine. I could have seen to drive. Then the next time when you come in for the second one, then drive yourself. The thing is, it's an hour away. And if I were having the procedure done in Willimantic, that would be one thing. But I'm having it done in New Britain. So I am probably going to have you drive me for both of them regardless, if you don't mind, okay?
Sure.
So February 18th.
As long as it's a day I can do it.
Put it on your calendar. Yeah, we're going to try to do it again.
Not right now. I'm in the middle of something else.
Okay, that's fine. All right. So glaucoma is a chronic eye condition, one of the leading causes of irreversible blindness. It's caused by increased pressure on the optic nerve and retina due to a buildup of fluid in the eye. Glaucoma can get worse over time and may damage the optic nerve, leading to vision loss or blindness. While glaucoma cannot be cured, certain treatments can reduce your intraocular pressure, the intraocular pressure in the eye. The goal of these treatments is to manage symptoms and maintain or possibly restore vision. Some natural treatments for glaucoma have the potential to help reduce intraocular pressure, or IOP, and improve uncomfortable symptoms, though most are not backed by strong evidence. However, a lot of the things you take to help to reduce your intraocular pressure help with all kinds of stuff. So let's take a look at this. So the products that help to reduce glaucoma symptoms have antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and anti-apoptotic properties that could offer protective effects against glaucoma. So the anti-apoptotic means that it prevents your body from breaking down tissue. So that's what sometimes you want apoptosis. You want apoptosis or apoptosis, however it's, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. You want that when you're trying to get at cancer treatments. But for your eyes, you don't want anything going after your eye. You don't want your eye tissue to be broken down. So the most commonly used natural treatments are ginkgo biloba, bilberry extract, and medical cannabis. I'm not taking ginkgo. I'm just taking so many things. I am taking bilberry. Bilberry and ginkgo both have the proanthocyanins that you need for your eyes. And I'm also taking lutein and zeaxanthin. And I'm not using cannabis because cannabis is contraindicated for narrow angle because cannabis, THC, causes vasodilation. So no cannabis for me. That's why I have to ask him when I go, once I have the procedure done, can I do cannabis? Can I be dilated? If I can be dilated, then I can do cannabis. All right. So while the benefits of many natural treatments for glaucoma are not proven, most of them carry low risk and minimal side effects. However, you want to consult with your doctor before adding natural supplements to any existing treatment regimen as interactions are possible. So ginkgo biloba extract is processed from the leaves of the ginkgo tree. And ginkgo is often grown. You'll see ginkgo trees on city streets, I think because they help detoxify the air. They help with pollution. If you walk on Roy Circle, or if you go by in the parking lot at E.O. Smith High School, on the walkway, when you walk around to the front of Town Hall, on the other side of E.O. Smith High School, there are ginkgo trees. And I think ginkgo is a very interesting plant because ginkgo stopped evolving thousands of years ago. Maybe even a million years ago. It's because it was so great. It survived through history in all kinds of conditions. And so you take ginkgo, you ingest ginkgo because it has a lot of antioxidant activity. It regulates your blood vessels, and it's also anti-inflammatory. And there's possible neuroprotective events or agents. Ginkgo can, the research on ginkgo for glaucoma is inconclusive. There are some studies that show that there are improved visual fields and blood flow in people taking ginkgo, while other studies couldn't confirm any significant benefits. Despite any definitive evidence, many people still use ginkgo either to supplement current glaucoma therapies or on its own. It's generally well tolerated, but some people get nauseous, they get dizzy, and they have stomach pain. People taking blood thinning medications have to talk to a doctor before taking ginkgo. Now, bilberry, I am taking. Bilberry is a heather. It's related to blueberries, and it's in the Ericaceae family. It's related to blueberries. It's vaccinium, so it's related to blueberries and lingonberries and cranberries. They're all in that vaccinium family. And it's a small fruit. It's native to Northern European, and it's similar. It's sort of like a blueberry. They have strong antioxidant properties, and bilberry extract has been rumored to help with eye conditions. While bilberry has been touted for its ability to help dry eye, macular degeneration, night vision, and retinopathy, there isn't consistent evidence. There was a small study that showed that an extended course of bilberry relieved eye strain for people exposed to computer terminals and near vision tasks, but it's not clear if it's helpful for glaucoma. Then there's medical cannabis. Cannabis, of course, is considered purely recreational. It's been used as a medication for many years. Medical cannabis has been shown to lower IOP in some people with glaucoma. But again, if you are diagnosed with narrow angles and you don't have the iridotomy procedure, it's not a good idea to do cannabis. I am not doing any cannabis until or unless I get that iridotomy procedure. So cannabis may have neuroprotective benefits. It prevents cell death and reduces free radicals. The symptom relief of medical cannabis is brief, like 3 or 4 hours. That means you need to ingest cannabis every few hours for continued relief. And it can have adverse effects. It can increase your heart rate, decrease your tears, give you dry eyes, and has addictive potential. So they're significant enough that medical cannabis is actually not recommended for long-term glaucoma management. Now, here's some more antioxidants that may be helpful. Saffron. So saffron's getting a big, it's having a moment. Saffron is helpful for, it's actually helpful for PMS, and it's helpful for postpartum depression. And I had a patient try it, but it upset her stomach, so she couldn't take it. But it has lovely antioxidant properties. It shows potential as a safe supplement for certain eye diseases. Caffeine. There's a weak association between caffeine and lowering your intraocular pressure. But it seems to shift in people who are genetically predisposed to higher intraocular pressure. So maybe yes, maybe no. Curcumin, which I have been taking for years. Curcumin is derived from the turmeric plant. It's a strong anti-inflammatory and shows the potential for, you can get curcumin eye drops to help with glaucoma progression. So I'm taking it as a pill, so I'm getting reduced inflammation from that. Anthocyanin, which is found in red and purple berries and grapes. Anthocyanin may improve blood flow in the eyes. So one way to get your anthocyanins, there's lots of plants that have anthocyanins, blueberries, bilberries, anything in the heather family, cranberries, and also things like raspberries and strawberries, although they have more ellagic acid, which also can be helpful. And they're related to anthocyanins. So I eat blueberries most days of the week, and I take bilberry. There are anthocyanins in bilberry. Coenzyme Q10, which I take. And it's a great antioxidant. It has neuroprotective properties and may be useful in glaucoma treatment. So probably my eyes are in good shape because I've already been consuming all of these things that help you. Then there's Lycium Barbarum, which is a Chinese herb. It shows promise as a preventative supplement against glaucoma and may slow disease progression. Then persimmon leaves, who knew? They can be helpful in lowering intraocular pressure and treating glaucoma. Then there's, Tritergium Wilfordi, which is another Chinese medicine herb. And it may improve retinal ganglion cell survival, but it has some side effects, unfortunately. And then there's other natural products that can reduce IOP. One of them is bakelin. So bakelin is the active ingredient in Chinese skullcap. Chinese skullcap, which is, it's been shown to reduce intraocular pressure in rats. And so we offer Chinese skullcap as a treatment for Lyme disease. It's Scutellaria bakelensis, not Scutellaria latiflora. The skullcap that is used for calming, which ends in latiflora, does not have bakelin in it. You have to get Scutellaria bakelensis, and otherwise known as Chinese skullcap. So that can help to reduce intraocular pressure. Forskolin, which is in Coleus forskolii, is in one of the coleus plants. Coleus forskolii is native to Southeast Asia and may help reduce eye fluid formation, and so it reduces your intraocular pressure. Then there's ginsenoside, which is an extract of ginseng. So you get ginsenoside, I'm guessing from Panax ginseng as well as Panax kingfolius. And it can help with dry eyes for people who have glaucoma. Then there's resveratrol. I used to take resveratrol. I'm not taking resveratrol now just because I'm taking so much stuff. But it's in berries and red wine. And I eat grapes. Sometimes I eat grapes and I go through periods where I'm eating grapes. I'm not eating them at the moment. But resveratrol may reduce retinal ganglion cell death. And then hesperidin, which is found in citrus. And that's what I'm having now. I'm getting into the Florida citrus. It's the time of year that I tell people it's okay to eat citrus because the citrus is coming from Florida. It's in season where it's coming from right now, even though it's never in season here. So if you tolerate citrus, I'm recommending people eat citrus now. And hesperidin is a citrus bioflavonoid. So where are the citrus bioflavonoids? Ryan, where are the citrus bioflavonoids?
I don't know where.
It's in the white stuff. It's mostly, you know how there's those little stringies that hold your orange together?
Yeah.
That's where the hesperidin is, and also in the rind.
Okay.
So the white part of the rind, that's where the hesperidin is. That's where the citrus bioflavonoids are. So if you want to get a lot of citrus bioflavonoids from your diet, by all means, eat grapefruits and oranges and lemons and limes.
But you peel that part off.
That's right. So what do? You get organic citrus, and then enjoy... You know, you grate citrus rind onto your food that it would taste good on. So it might taste good on fish, might taste good in a salad, but you have to eat the rind. You have to grate the peel, but you should only do that with organic because they're not.
Because otherwise, you're going to be grinding chemicals.
You got it. Right. That's exactly right. So that's a way to get citrus bioflavonoids without taking a pill.
So what about just taking the rinds and putting them into a grinder and grinding them up? Like a little food processor.
Yeah, you could do that. You know, you could get citrus peel. You could probably buy...
And then you could put those in your protein drink.
Yeah, sure. You could do that. Yeah. Just make sure that if you're going to do that, that it's organic. Right. Yeah. There's no reason why not. Remember that you might want to check out how it tastes to you because the rind tends to be bitter. It doesn't taste like the fruit.
Right.
You know, but if it's overwhelmed by... the protein and the fruit and all the other things you have in it.
But if it has positive, health reasons,
it's
a good thing to do.
But citrus rind, the other thing you can do is make candied rind. That's if there are recipes
it
for
sounds
that.
Like a laborious,
it's probably a project.
Thing. Yeah.
But yeah, it's true. If you get yourself some organic oranges, organic lemons, organic limes, and you want to throw that in your protein shake, you could do that. And then you get citrus bioflavonoids. A great thing to have. It's a great anti-inflammatory to have during the winter season because citrus, because vitamin C, bioavailable vitamin C and bioflavonoids are really good for helping to reduce inflammation and helping to prevent and treat colds and flus. So there are some disadvantages that this article suggests, that most supplements and herbs are not regulated by the FDA. Some supplements could be harmful if taken in the wrong amounts, which is why you want to go see your friendly practitioner, your natural practitioner, your naturopathic physician, or whatever natural practitioner you go to see. There can be side effects, just like with anything else, and I monitor side effects with my patients. If they call me and say, I had this happen, and I say, okay, I have a saying in my practice, anything can cause anything in anyone. Why? Because biochemical individuality. Everybody has biochemical individuality. So just because I do fantastically with olive leaf, I have many patients who can't take olive leaf because it gives them an upset stomach. I'm very fortunate that olive leaf is fine for me. But that happens to me sometimes. I will have patients, I'll give them olive leaf. Olive leaf is great to take if you have chronic Epstein-Barr virus or any kind of a chronic virus, or just for prevention for viruses for this time of year. It's also a great herb for blood pressure, but a lot of people take it and they get an upset stomach from it. So, and lots of people don't. So everybody's different. So that's why if you take natural supplements, under the auspices of a natural practitioner, we can help you figure out what you're taking and what's going on with it. And I'm not the person who says, well, this shouldn't cause that. If you think it's causing that, then what do? You stop taking it. And if you want to try taking it again, see if it causes the thing, then you could do that. But, you know, elimination and challenge, that's the gold standard of having a reaction to something. So you know, not as much data to show that certain things help to treat glaucoma, and some supplements can cost a lot of money. But the thing is, I'm taking supplements. I don't have increased intraocular pressure. I do have the narrow angles. I have at least two risk factors for narrow angles. One of them is being 62, and the other is being female. I have three. I have presbyopia. So I'm farsighted. And I'm 62 years old. So as you get older, you're more likely to have this happen. And I'm female. So those are three risk factors. There are other risk factors too, but I find it very interesting that in China, they don't give you the iridotomy unless they think you're at great risk. At somebody like me who has narrow angle with normal intraocular pressure, I wouldn't be getting the iridotomy. It's very interesting. So there's medications for glaucoma. Usually they're in the form of eye drops that lower your internal eye pressure. Usually you're going to get something like a latanoprost, for example. They directly help with the drainage of the eye. And then you have blood pressure lowering drops that you put in your eye. Usually it's timolol that you put in your eye, and that's a beta blocker, and it directly lowers the pressure in your eye. So people with actual glaucoma get given those things. That was not offered to me. And you're offered laser surgery, like trabeculoplasty or iridotomy, and the iridotomy is what I'm going to have. That helps to give you alternate routes of fluid drainage and prevent an acute episode of increased pressure. And open surgeries, there are surgical procedures that can create a new drainage pathway for eye fluid, and those would be the trabeculectomy, glaucoma drainage devices that they can put in, and then cataract surgery. So that's another treatment, because if your lens is too close to your iris, you'll have narrow angles, and they'll give you a new lens, and then you won't have presbyopia anymore. So it's interesting. So glaucoma is a progressive eye condition. It can cause blindness. So please, it's a good idea to go to your eye doctor. If your eye doctor's recommending every 2 years, that's fine. When I started seeing the optometrist, they wanted me to come in every year, and now I'm glad I did, because the second year I came in, after having gone in a year earlier, they were like, guess what? You have narrow angles. So thank goodness they caught that. And so ginkgo, bilberry, and medical cannabis have shown promise in relieving glaucoma symptoms. Again, don't do cannabis if you are diagnosed with narrow angles. And some people do find relief with those supplements. So there you go. That's how you treat glaucoma. All right. So we were talking about New Year's resolutions. So let's, it's still, I know it's already February, but these are all, this is still really good advice. So I'm going to start, I'm going to give you some more advice to help your, help you with what's going on with your year. And, you know, we talk about how people make New Year's resolutions in January. I just really think January is a bad time to make New Year's resolutions. I think the best thing you can do in January is embrace rest, because you because what you do is you have you're very busy in the summer. You're doing you're active and busy, and then you have September, October, November, where you very rapidly transition from a time where it's great to be outside and you feel very energetic and you keep pushing yourself to be energetic and your job intends for you to continue to be energetic, all while the light is going away and the cold is coming on and people start getting sick. And and then the holidays show up and you're gang housed with a lot of people and you're more likely to get sick. So you probably have, a lot of people will have at least one illness. We already had one cold. I'm very happy that we went to this event and, knock on wood, we're not sick. I don't have a sore throat. Do you feel like you're getting sick?
No.
No, it's very good. Usually this time of year, this is the week we get sick. We catch something. It usually, you know, the very end of January, the very beginning of February, is when we catch colds. When we had our COVID, this is when we had it. Ron tested positive like on the 30th or 31st, and I tested positive on like the 1st or the 2nd. Or maybe he tested positive a little earlier than that, but that's when we had it. That's when our immune systems tend to kind of tank because we've been going, and you have the holidays. That's why it's kind of like after the holidays, it's a good idea to just rest. And January is probably not a good time to start anything new that you want to, you want to practice hygge, the Danish practice of cuddling in and snuggling and being, you know, just drinking warm drinks and being cozy and relaxing and just hanging out with people in a calm way. So, anyway, so now that I'm noticing that the sun is somewhat higher in the sky. We are halfway between the solstice and the equinox. We're recording this on Groundhog Day, so that is actually, you know, Candlemas and also Brigid and also Groundhog Day. And we only have 6 weeks until the vernal equinox, and we have 1 month before it turns to meteorological spring. And meteorological seasons are different from astronomical seasons. Astronomical seasons are based on the equinoxes and the solstices, which have to do with the position of the Earth relative to the sun. Whereas meteorological dates have to do with the months and their average temperatures. So the average temperatures tend to be lowest December, January, and February. So that's meteorological winter. Meteorological spring starts on March 1st. So March, April, May, you tend to get moderate temperatures. And then June, July, August, you tend to get your hotter temperatures. And that's meteorological summer. So anyway, we're only a month away from meteorological spring. And I'm finding that now that it's February, I feel more inclined to do some work on myself and you know, look at health stuff. Now, what I did at the very beginning of the year is I made all the doctor's appointments. I had a bunch of all these things going on. So I made the doctor's appointments, and some of them turned out to be things I was going for regular checkups, and they found that I had things that I now have to take care of and require multiple doctor's appointments. So I'm only going to have two more ophthalmological appointments until my appointment next year. And then I have a bunch of dental stuff left to do. I'm going to have three more dental appointments. And then I think I'm going to call Crossroads sooner rather than later, because I would like somebody to take a look at me sooner rather than later. It's a lot, but it's worth it. So anyway, more New Year's resolutions. So here's a good one. Stop negative self-talk. When you do negative self-talk, it can chip away at your confidence and your well-being. You can make a New Year's resolution to engage in more positive self-talk and to challenge unhelpful critical thoughts. That can strengthen your overall self-image and inspire other people to speak more kindly to themselves as well. Try not to frame harsh thoughts for yourself. Hey, shout out to Ida Montesi and shout out to Ken Weber. My goodness, those are different people in different parts of my life. So nice to see you listening. Ken Weber, I went to high school with. Mm. Yeah, you know who Ida Montesi is.
Yes, I do.
Yes. So you might start by reframing harsh thoughts, turning "I always mess things up" into "I'm learning and it's okay to make mistakes," or by speaking to yourself as you would a friend, encouraging yourself like you're doing your best and that's enough. And that's one way to stop that negative self-talk. I noticed that one of my favorite online yoga instructors, Cassandra, she does a lot of meditations that include affirmations. So finding affirmation meditations, it's very easy to do. You can go on YouTube or you can go online anywhere and find videos of affirmation meditations and just listen to them, and it will encourage you to be kind to yourself. So another thing to do is to limit screen time. So a lot of people depend on their phones and computers for work and entertainment, but if you spend too much time on electronic devices, particularly on social media, it can be linked to depression, anxiety, loneliness, and it's also tiring. I find that if I'm on my phone too much, you know, whether I'm checking the news, checking the weather, scrolling through social media, or playing games, it's hard on my eyes. I notice that my forehead is less relaxed, my eyes are less relaxed. One of the things that I do to help to cut back on screen time is to go to the library and get paper books. And also, I own paper books that I could be reading as well. So reading paper books, you don't have to buy them. You can go to your public library and get books. And it's something that you can do that's a relaxing pastime. And it's much more relaxing than looking at a screen. I know you can also read a book on your device because you can have the Kindle app or other apps that allow you to read books. But and they do a pretty good job of reducing the pixels so it looks more like paper. But the thing is, when you're looking at a device, you're always looking at pixels, and your eyes have to acclimate to the light, and they have to put the pixels together so you see a cohesive picture of what you're reading. So if you can manage to get paper books, that's a great way to relax. And the other thing that you can do is, if you're into this sort of thing, is crafts, things that you can do with your hands that are not screens. So you could play with a fidget. You can certainly do needlepoint or crochet or tat or knit. And anyone can knit. Knitting is not limited to females. Anyone of any gender can knit. So it's perfectly fine. I know that there's some famous professional sports player who knits, and that's part of how he manages his anxiety, or manages, you know, just keeps calm. So you can set a resolution to cut back on screen time. And, you know, if you have an Apple product, Apple tells you how many hours per week you've used your device. They give you a report on that. So you can cut back on looking at social media, watching TV, or playing computer games. And you might find that improves your mood and enhances productivity. And you get more sleep and better sleep. Then there's self-care resolutions. Drink more water.
Which
I am demonstrating right now. Take more me time. Taking time for yourself is not selfish. It's necessary for optimal health and well-being. For people with busy schedules and limited time, making a resolution to prioritize self-care can take some planning, but it's worth the time investment. It doesn't have to be elaborate, expensive, or time-consuming. It's just time you carve out for yourself to take care of your mind and body, which can mean taking a bath every week, attending a yoga class, preparing a healthy meal for yourself, walking in nature, getting an extra hour of sleep. While I'm trying, I get as much sleep as I can manage. And that I have another problem, which is, you know, getting out of bed for the day. And this is another resolution to get more quality sleep. It's a vital component of your overall health, and having sleep deprivation can have severe consequences, which can increase your risk of weight gain, heart disease, depression. There are many reasons why people don't get enough sleep, so you want to examine your schedule and lifestyle to determine the best ways to improve both your quantity and quality. So if you have a yucky mattress, if your mattress is too old, you may need to get a new mattress or a more mattress that's better for you. You may want to look at your pillow. If you're not ready to get a mattress, look at your pillows. Pillows can be a less expensive way to improve your sleep environment. Is your room cool enough? Is it warm enough? Do you need a fan? Do you want to have a fan going? Do you want to open a window? Do you want to keep the windows closed? Do you need to do something about the light pollution in your bedroom? Do you need to draw the curtains? Do you need to turn off lights? Do you need to get rid of that clock that's in the bedroom that you look at? Are you consuming too much caffeine that's keeping you awake? Are you consuming caffeine too late in the day? Are you going to bed too late? And one thing that people do is they don't feel like they have any time to themselves during the day. So they wind up staying up late and reading their book or playing their game or watching TV and doing things before bed. And it extends the time which they go to bed. So be careful with that. See if you can break up your day so you have some time during the day where you're able to do relaxing things. Going on vacation, even taking a short vacation, can have significant immediate positive effects on your stress level. So taking a vacation, it can be an inexpensive one. You can go somewhere. You can even take day trips within your state. Or you can take a short vacation that's just a weekend. You can go with friends or family or by yourself and travel somewhere that you've always wanted to visit, or even plan a staycation. And the thing with a staycation is when you're home, you tend to want to do things. You see things around the house that you need to do. So sometimes it's a good idea to get away from the house so you can just simply relax. But having a new perspective on where you're located is always a good thing. You can try a new hobby. It's common for adults to let hobbies that you used to love fall by the wayside because of busy schedules or you're not motivated, but having a hobby that you love can help you be happier and healthier. So try out something that you might enjoy. Again, it could be knitting or crocheting or painting or woodworking or scrapbooking, something that you used to enjoy, playing an instrument. That's something I've let fall by the wayside because of, you know, energy and fatigue and time and all that kind of thing. And, you know, I used to play a variety of instruments, not well, but I used to enjoy playing them. I have a piano, I have a guitar, I have drums, I have marimbas, I have all kinds of stuff, and we don't pull them out. It's very sad. So, And then there's preventative health resolutions. There's some interesting things you can do, like you can get healthier household products. So maybe if you're buying conventional chemical commercial stuff that you want to turn around and get stuff at the health food store, or make your own, use things like vinegar or health food store brands or natural beauty products, laundry detergents and personal care products, so you have a healthier environment. That's something that you can flip around. You can use up what you have and then replace them with healthier products. Go to the doctor. Well, I've certainly done that resolution. Oh my goodness, so many appointments. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure, if you haven't been going to the doctor, you want to get examined regularly. There's many reasons, because they can find things that you didn't know you had, which you don't always want to happen. But on the other hand, knowing what's going on is important, because if you can spot potential problems before they become big problems. So, going to the doctor's office depends on a lot of factors. the kind of medical care you have, your age and your medical history. You probably want to see your primary care at least once a year. My primary care makes me come in several times a year because he's monitoring certain things. So I got that. Visiting the doctor, I've got that nailed down. Oh, my goodness. So you want to make sure you're taking care of your teeth. If you haven't been to the dentist in a long time, you want to do that. You want to make sure you brush and floss, rinse. You could water floss, use a remineralizing paste. There are a bunch of things that you can do. And that gum disease can be associated with serious health conditions like Alzheimer's disease and cardiovascular disease. So if you haven't been to the dentist in a long time, it's a good idea to go to the dentist and get any potential problems taken care of. Ideally, you're supposed to get prophylaxis, which is checkup and scaling and cleaning at least once, but ideally they want to see you twice a year. And usually your insurance will pay for you to go for prophylaxis twice a year. So I definitely go twice a year, but then I've been having more decay, so I'm seeing them twice a year plus as needed. So so most of your New Year's resolutions may only be kept for a short period. And if your New Year's resolution is always go to the gym and lose weight, that's a really hard one to do. I think with I think you have to take a step back from that and have a resolution of, I'm going to figure out what kind of exercise I enjoy and start doing some of that. I'm going to eat more healthfully, not necessarily have a goal of I'm going to lose 30 pounds, but a goal of I'm going to eat more fruits and vegetables. I'm going to make healthier choices when it comes to desserts. I'm going to make my coffee or tea healthier by not putting so much sugar or heavy creamer into it. So there's little things you can do that are easier to do. And anything that you do that's a smaller change, you're more likely to keep that habit. Now, I've given you a list of 23 things to do, but when you have a list, you should let the list remember the list, and then you pick up the list and you look at it and you go, what do I feel like working on today? And just work on that one thing. Okay, I'm going to floss more. I'm going to buy some nice dental floss and I'm going to make sure I floss. I think it's really important to brush your teeth and floss, at least floss, and probably do a remineralizing paste before bed. Because that way you have anything you ate during the day out of your mouth, and you're going to spend all night with remineralizing stuff around to help to fight cavities better. So that a good resolution is brush your teeth before bed. That if you're not doing that, that's a really good resolution. That's something I'm trying to work on to make sure that happens. Because what happens is you get so tired you don't want to get up to do it. But one way to do that is to do it a little bit earlier, and then you have to be done with all of your eating for the day. Not drinking water, but eating. So anyway, so those are some New Year's resolutions for you. So that's it. That's all the time we have for you today. And we'll come back next week and talk to you about more good stuff. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.